even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
These days, the Premier League is filled with sinister billionaires and Gucci-clad stars doing TikTok dances with Salt Bae. But up in Scotland, football is how it should be.
What a goal! What a goal! What a goal! He's a genius again for Scotland! France 0, Scotland 1!
They kidnap their teammates, scrap with tea ladies, and catch hypothermia on post-match benders.
And the Dykes, Kenny McLean! Can you hear me, Erling Haaland? The Vikings might have plundered all the beautiful Scottish women and some good-looking sheep, but now it's the Scots doing the plundering here in Norway, and we're taking 3 points back to Scotland and a few sheep.
From knocking out fishermen to smuggling coke, welcome to the wild world of Scottish football. I am Jack. My colleague Zach is here as ever.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, mate. And we are joined by Mr. Dwayne Roft, who is a long-standing guru and savant to the upshot, mainly in the marketing field, but he also happens to live in Glasgow.
Hello, guys. That's a very bold intro, setting high expectations. Thank you.
Yeah, no pressure. So I also crowbarred in that you're in Glasgow, which makes it sound like that's why you're here.
Yeah, I'm honoured, guys. Thank you. Great to be here. I'm really just here to police the accents, though. I heard that snooker episode in the Northern Irish ones, and I thought it could go disastrously wrong. So
I think if anything, it's going to be worse today. Yeah, than that,
I think so. Belfast is one of my best accents. snooker. Is that good?
That wasn't too bad.
Scottish can be harder. All right, well, you can police it. And obviously, as I said, you live in Glasgow, but you don't support either of the old firm teams. Is that right?
Well, so I used to support Rangers when I was a kid, and I would travel like 2 hours to see Rangers and then 2 hours back on school nights when we were during high school. And then I moved to Glasgow and I realised it was about a lot more than just football. And I thought, this probably isn't for me. So we'd travel 2 hours each way to watch Rangers. And then I got a flat that's physically as close to Ibrox Stadium as you can possibly get. And I've not been to one match.
Never been again.
No,
so is it off-putting being that close to the rivalry?
No, I think you can sort of distance yourself from it if you want to, but like there is like a sort of on match days, like Old Firm match days, there is like a sort of atmosphere around the city that, you know,
an energy,
yeah, an energy, especially when there's like stuff at stake. But I guess there's always stuff at stake.
Yeah,
it's there's a Kevin Bridges joke where he talks about being at a house party and they put FIFA on the TV and it was like a computer versus computer simulation of Rangers versus Celtic. And people were getting into this match as much as they would an actual match. And that's based on a true story. So that's the kind of level of sort of...
Well, no one's even playing.
It's a computer versus the computer. And I want to say passion, but I feel like that's doing a sort of disservice.
It's fanaticism.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what you
do. Who won, do you know?
I don't know that specific case.
I guess you can just replay it until your side.
Exactly.
Were the fans of both teams there, like getting aggressive?
Yeah, as far as I understand, they were both cheering for it. Like it was an actual match, like an actual tire decider.
I had to play it at 10 a.m.
It's a CPU or CPU FIFA. Yeah. But then on the other end of the spectrum, so the Old Firm's quite weird because you can go anywhere in the world and people know Rangers and Celtic and they'll ask you Rangers and Celtic. And then on the other end of the spectrum, where I'm from, a place called Brechin, one side of the ground is just a hedge. It's an actual hedge covering one side of the ground. So it's kind of got both elements. Yeah. It covers a wide spectrum of Scottish football.
Do you think that is part of, I mean, we're going to get into the stories, but part of the magic of it is that you've got this, you know, this intense like passion and rivalry, but you've also got this like slightly village aspect to it?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said at the start, like doing things properly, like you look at the English football in particular, where like every Premiership club is owned by some kind of investment firm or hedge firm or something like that. Whereas in Scotland, it's owned by people who actually care about the clubs by and large, I think. And so it's got that kind of village feeling. If you sort of lean into it for that reason and appreciate it for that, then it's, you know,
still got that sort of local businessman done,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
buys the club, like owns the exactly, local paper mill or
there's
something.
There's
like
a role for them in the community kind of yeah, thing, I feel like. So yeah, it's but like there are the Rangers and Celtic aside, obviously they're a different thing.
Yeah, right. Zach, do you want to kick us off? So we're just going to talk about some amazing characters and stories from the world of Scottish football.
Yeah, and we're gonna start with one of Scottish football, well, actually football in general, is most terrifying hard man, and that's Duncan Ferguson. So I think we're actually going to do a full episode on Big Dunk at some point. So this is just a few highlights from his time in Scotland. So Duncan started out as a young striker at Dundee United, where he got a bit of a reputation for being good with his head in more ways than one. So in 1991, he gets the first of 4 convictions for assault. So he's on a pretty heavy night out in Stirling, where he's from. And at the end of the night, he gets into an argument with a policeman at a taxi rank, which Duncan resolves by headbutting him in the face. And from this point, he gets the nickname Duncan Disorderly, which is one of my favourite nicknames. And he lives up to it, because 2 years later, he's back at a taxi rank, this time in Dundee. And he's spotted by a fan of Dundee's hated rival, St Johnstone, who starts giving him a bit of lip. And the guy's on crutches. He's got like a broken leg. But so you think like most people would, you know, take a step back. But Duncan doesn't have that approach and beats the shit out of him. So I think by this point, Dundee are already thinking like, we've got a bit of a wrong one on our hands. And the manager actually comes out and is like, I can't really control him. And that's proven 6 months later when he walks into a quaint little pub in the fishing village of Anstruther. And Duncan's wearing like silk gloves. He's got a flower behind his ear, and he's wearing a lady's earring, which, I don't know, it seems pretty out of character for Duncan. Apparently the reason is that he was taking the piss out of a teammate's dress sense.
Right.
But whatever the reason, when you walk into a pub that's filled with like storm-weathered trawlermen, that's bound to attract a bit of attention. And two fishermen start winding him up, which, as like previous stories prove, is not really a good idea. So Duncan knocks both of them out. I don't know. I was reading through these stories, and he seems to have like a bit of a hit list of traditional professions that he's targeted. He's done like a policeman, he's done a postman, he's done a fisherman,
butcher, like, baker.
Where's this guy living? Is it like Ballamory or something?
That candlestick maker's gonna get it.
Yeah, he's quaking in his boots. Yeah.
Is it always a headbutt? I don't know why I think of headbutts.
I think the first one was definitely a headbutt. I think there was possibly a headbutt in the second one as well.
He scored lots of headers, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He's good with his head.
Yeah, target man.
But anyway, this sort of temperamental streak doesn't stop Rangers forking out $4 million for Ferguson in 1993, which at the time was a British record fee, which I think kind of shows how big those clubs were at that time. But it's not long before he's back in trouble. So in April 1994, Rangers are playing Raith Rovers at Ibrox, and Duncan's like tussling for the ball with Jock McStay, one of the Raith Rovers players, and he then spins around and lands his trademark headbutt right in Jock's face. Jock's obviously like falls to the ground, he's in a lot of pain, but the referee completely misses it. So Duncan plays the rest of the match, scores his first goal for Rangers in that game. But unfortunately for him, the whole incident is caught on tape, and the police decide to press charges. And because Duncan's already, he's like on probation after the first three vicious assaults. He ends up going to jail for this. So he gets a 3-month sentence. He ends up, he's the first and the only player to be jailed for an on-field offence.
There's no one else.
No, not
to this day.
How
did Cantona get away with kung fu? To be fair, it was his first offence. Yeah,
so Ferguson came out after this and he was basically saying that if the ref had sent him off or given him a yellow or something, then he doesn't think he would have been charged by the police because it would be like double jeopardy, I guess. Although he did get a like 12-match ban or something afterwards anyway, so maybe it still was.
What, you think the police were like, well, if the ref's not going to step in,
Is
that how it works?
Is he quite remorseful about these incidents?
Not at all.
My other question about headbutting is, doesn't it hurt? I've never headbutted
someone.
I've
always wondered this.
I have been headbutted. I have my nose broken.
Really?
It fucking hurt. Can confirm. But I've never done it.
It's all about technique, isn't it?
Is there like a part of your head that if you do it when it doesn't...
Him with the top of your forehead.
I guess
10 years of heading a football, you're going to build up that bone or that muscle or whatever you need to deliver in the face.
He's probably not bothered either way.
Mm. Yeah.
The guy on crutches was probably the most unreasonable. I don't know what the guy was saying. But.
Yeah. Yeah, you think just walk away from that one.
Crutches.
But he goes to jail. He goes to Barlinnie Jail, which is in the middle of Glasgow. And he says it was pretty terrifying because half of the inmates were Celtic fans who just wanted to kill him.
But then the other half would be Rangers fans.
Well, true.
Surely you're protected,
I guess that's that kind of how American jails segregate.
Yeah. Rule one, find your tribe in jail, in my experience.
I also discovered this, that in 2005, a Finnish composer, a guy called Osmo Tapio Rehala, wrote a symphonic piece about Duncan Ferguson. It was called Barlinnie 9, after the jail that he was at. And he says that it's a musical portrait of Ferguson. Do you want to have a listen?
God, yeah. One for the culture vultures in the audience. All right, so we're gonna give Duncan a full pod at some time.
Yeah, there's plenty more
because he drifts over the border to Everton and keeps going.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to talk about another cult hero, Frank McAvenny. Dwayne, you're a huge fan.
Big fan of Frank. Yep.
So Frank, he was sort of the Scottish George Best. Would that be a fair?
In terms of ability. No, in terms of being a shagger, absolutely.
Dwayne sent us a copy of Frank's autobiography, a copy each, which we're going to read when we give him a proper episode. But what's the title?
Scoring, an expert's guide.
Yeah, which I have confirmed is a triple entendre. Scoring goals, girls and gear. And that's basically, I guess that's where the George Best comparison comes in. But he was a legend at St Mirren, Celtic and then West Ham, where he banged in 28 goals in a season. So he's a serious player. But I want to talk about his 1996 antics. So he hung up his boots after a swan song at St Mirren the season before. And newly retired, Frank really got stuck into the drugs, I think it's fair to say. And in this year, he was caught by customs officials in Dover with a car filled with 100 grand in cash. And they also found a bit of cannabis and methadone in there, which probably gives you a bit of an indication of what money was going to go on.
That's just breakfast in Glasgow.
Anyway, so I guess he was about to board a ferry with these items, and the customs officials stop him. They seize the money and they're like, look, you can have it back if you can persuade us that it wasn't for drugs. So Frank fights this long battle in 1996 to reclaim the money. And his excuse for why he had it was that he said, I was buying a boat to salvage valuables from a sunken treasure ship in the Atlantic. Which, I mean, we like a creative excuse, and I think that fits with the old I slipped, fell, and landed arse first on the ketchup bottle doctor excuse. I mean, sunken treasure. Also, would 100 grand get you a good enough
vessel? I don't know.
And you don't need like a submarine to get into the Atlantic to find sunken treasure.
Yeah, it does. I think he's been reading too many kids' books, I think.
Yeah.
I think the thing about Frank is that there's a bit of a naivety about him where I think it could be plausibly true, and he thought that would be It's like he's got the vibe of a guy who sort of met someone in a pub and said that, you know,
really? Oh, I like
would you like to invest in a deep sea vessel? And he goes, yes, yeah, let's do it.
Do people still invest in that sort of?
Well,
that is fun.
It's a big investment. It's a big risk. I think that's big risk, big reward.
Maybe, it would be depending on what you find. So cool if a legendary footballer found sunken treasure. There must be sunken treasure out there in the Atlantic.
I don't think Frank was the guy to find it.
Yeah, the methadone, that's...
Yeah. Unless that was the treasure.
He's a taster of the treasure. Anyway, so he spends all year fighting this battle with the customs officials, and he loses. They keep the money, and presumably the weed and the methadone. And so he's looking to unwind after this stressful court battle. And Frank had always been partial to a weekend in London. Throughout his career, even when he was, you know, at Celtic, he'd be flying down to London every weekend to go and party with Page Three girls and the like. And in this same year, 1996, that he's fighting this court battle, he goes down to London for a big weekend, and he's on his way back. He lands at Glasgow Airport and he's stopped by customs officials again. I think he might be on some sort of list by this point. Any sunken treasure on you, sir? And they do find a baggie containing 0.38 grams of white powder, which I guess, you know, just a bit of recreational use. And they ask him, what's this? And Frank replies, ah, it's just a wee bit of Charlie. I love the honesty.
Sorry, you can't get in trouble for that.
Yeah, it's a wee bit. Do you think if you've been caught with drugs so often that when you get caught with something like that, it's basically like not having any on you?
I don't know. You'd think he'd learn from his mistakes of like trying to take it on an airplane or something, wouldn't you?
I don't know where they found it, if it was prison pocket stuff, or probably not by the sounds of it. Sounds like it was just in his pocket.
Yeah.
I just like, again, it's kind of the naivety thing, isn't it? It's just like, oh, yeah, like, bit of Charlie.
I think there is that genuine aspect of it. For me, just have to have a good time, and he didn't see the problem with it.
So. He's kind of trying different approaches to getting around it. He's gone for the extremely creative excuse, and now he's just gone for like blunt, just straight up. Yeah, it's just a wee bit of Charlie.
Yeah.
Next, what are you going to do?
Just run. Yeah. Peg it out. I feel like Pete Doherty, the singer, he used to just like get caught with crack and just be like, oh, it's a bit of crack. And didn't he have it on him in court or something? I might have imagined this, but I swear there's a story where he's called up to speak to the judge and he drops some drugs in the courtroom. Might have imagined that. Anyway, sorry, back in Frank McAvaney's world. He's still with these policemen in Glasgow Airport. So they've asked him what it is. He says, it's just a wee bit of Charlie. And then they go, Charlie, do you mean cocaine? And Frank replies, aye, supposed to be. I don't actually know if it's cocaine or not. Like, could be fucking washing powder.
Yeah, it's
the honesty. Right. That's the end of Frank. We'll do more Frank. We'll do a full episode. I don't want to spoil the rest of it, but taste it.
There's lots of good stuff in there for sure.
Yeah. So next up, in 2004, Scottish football was stunned by the arrival of the great Anelka in the small town of Kilkenny on the east coast of Fife. So unfortunately for the fans of local side Raith Rovers, this was not Nicholas Anelka, but his brother Claude. So from what I can tell, Claude at this point was going through what I would describe as a midlife crisis. So he'd had a pretty undistinguished career as a semi-pro player in France, but he then spent most of the 90s as the agent of his younger and much more successful brother Nicholas. He'd then quit that and decided he wanted to become a part-time DJ. That also didn't really go to plan. So he went back to football and decided this time he wanted to be a manager. Obviously, the normal path is, you know, you have to work your way up. You manage like the local kids team, do your coaching badges. But Claude didn't really fancy any of that. So instead, he decided to go around financially struggling clubs and offer them 300 grand in investment in exchange for being their manager. So both QPR and Barnsley unsurprisingly turned him down, but eventually cash-strapped Raith Rovers agreed. So they sack their much-loved manager and appoint Claude instead. And at his first press conference, he talks the talk. He says that he's going to turn Raith Rovers into the third force in Scottish football behind Celtic and Rangers. He waxes lyrical about his tactical philosophy, says that he's inspired by Johan Cruyff and Arsene Wenger. He also talks about his unrivaled contact book in football and that he's going to bring in all of these French stars to Raith Rovers. pretty quickly that turns out to be complete bollocks. So he clears out the whole squad of players and brings in a load of amateur players from France. It turns out that some of them had never even played 11-a-side football before, only 7-a-side.
How?
Basically his mate. So actually there was a funny quote from the next manager who comes in after Claude. He says, "One day I called Herve Bande to my office." Herve Bande is one of the players that Claude had signed. "I called Herve Bande to my office and told him he had no chance. He agreed with me and admitted that he'd hardly ever played 11-a-side. He proceeded to tell me that he knew he wouldn't make it as a footballer, but he'd happily stay around the club and paint my office and do general handiwork."
It's just a bloke.
Yeah. just like a painter and decorator.
Was he his
France.
Mate?
I think it's just his mates, yeah.
Well, and he's just putting him on like 500 quid a week and everyone's happy.
Yeah. So do you want to go?
How have they not played 11-a-side? Like, I've played quite a lot of 11-a-side.
Yeah. They've probably played it a couple of times at school.
Not competitively.
Mostly been Power League.
Got a bit of a dodgy uni, but
now they're playing in the Scottish second division.
He's a great painter, though, to be fair.
Yeah. The office looks great.
Yeah, office did look great, but unfortunately this team of French painters and decorators didn't do too well, and Claude lost 9 out of 10 of the matches that he managed. He drew the other one, and it included 2 cup exits to lower league teams, and he was then sacked in October. With apparently the club were, relegation was virtually decided already 3 months into the season.
Who sacked him? Doesn't he own the club?
He doesn't own the club, but they sacked him as manager and he appointed himself sporting director for a little while, and then I think threw in the towel on that as well.
To be fair, even if he hadn't been Anelka's brother, even if you just said Nicholas Anelka's agent is taking us over, I'd be like, oh fuck, Anelka.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, if there's one name that gives red flags, it's Anelka.
Although he's experienced a lot of clubs, I guess. And maybe as his agent, you're actually a pretty good firefighter.
Well, if you're the agent, are you not instigating or agitating a lot of these kind of things as well?
So. I would assume that Nicholas Anelka was not very well advised through his career.
Yeah, true.
And I imagine his contact book wasn't exactly for the friendly people, right?
Also, just the fact that he was working as a part-time nightclub DJ at the time that he took over as manager is also a red flag.
Yeah, it's like, can't stick around after the game, guys. I've got a gig.
Yeah.
It's quite a specific amount of money he was offering clubs as well, right?
Yeah, 300 grand.
You think you'd go for a quarter of a mil or something like that.
How desperate does a club need to be to sell the manager's job?
to a part-time
They're a Scottish
manager.
Premier League side, right?
Well, they were second division, I think.
Maybe first second division at the time. Yeah.
I love that the ambition's always to become the third force. Like, come on.
Maybe it's a new business model for lower division clubs to sell
the manager's spot.
There was that, was it a Polish lower league team who... sold, there was like the son of a local billionaire who always wanted to be a footballer, and if you see pictures of him, he's never going to make it. I hate to break it to him, but they sold a spot in their team for like $500,000,
and he came on for the captain.
Yeah, he came on. Yeah,
yeah. See, if you can dream it, you can do it.
You can afford it. Yeah.
if you can dream it and you find that sunken treasure, you can. you can do it, man.
There's also that guy, which island is it in the Caribbean? Oh no, is it Suriname?
Yeah.
As the owner of the club, Ronnie Brunswick. He's the vice president of Suriname, and he also owns a club, and they qualified for the like Champions League equivalent of CONCACAF, and he picked himself up front and he played like an hour's worth of the game.
And he's like 60 years old or something like that. Yeah.
And at the end of the game, you just see him, he goes into the opposition dressing room with a big brown envelope of cash and he's just handing out cash. And then he couldn't play in the away leg because he's on an Interpol watch list for money laundering.
Amazing.
Yeah. Love a colourful owner. And speaking of colourful owners, probably the most famous in Scottish football history was Vladimir Romanov. This is a well-known saga. So Romanov was a Russian-Lithuanian oligarch who'd made his money in slightly shady circumstances. And at some point in the early noughties, he decided he wanted to own a Scottish football team. Apparently the story is that he thought that if he bought a team in Scotland, he could basically buy sort of respectability in Europe, a bit like Abramovich did. And this was a year after Abramovich took over Chelsea. So he obviously spotted an opportunity to do the same. And there were a lot of Scottish clubs that were quite cash-strapped at the time, and eventually he took over Hearts, obviously a proud club based in Edinburgh, who hadn't won the title in many years because the old firm had dominated it. And Romanov said, "I'm going to turn Hearts into the first winners of the Scottish Premier League, first non-Old Firm winners since 1985, when, of course...
Aberdeen?
Yeah, Aberdeen won it under Sir Alex
Ferguson, yeah.
Yeah, I always find that so mental.
Was that a quiz?
That was a quiz. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe we should be doing more quiz trivia. That was a quiz. Correct. Well done, Dwayne.
Thank you.
Zach, did you know that?
I did know that. But I did read your notes for the show before this.
What do you mean? This is totally unplanned. This is off the cuff. Anyway, so Hearts fans actually really buy into this. I think there's Abramovich fever in football anyway. And I remember because Newcastle got bought by Mike Ashley soon after and everyone thought he was going to be an Abramovich. So Hearts fall for the same thing and they think, this is our billionaire. We're going to break the Old Firm stranglehold on the league. And they actually start really well. They bring in George Burley as manager. I think they win their first 10 games and they're top of the Scottish Premiership. And everyone's thinking, like, hang on, are they actually going to do this? And then randomly, Romanov just decides to sack Burley. Apparently, the rumour is that he started picking, basically telling Burley who to pick. And Burley was like, I'm not doing that. So he sacks him and he brings in Graham Ricks, who you might remember, he was the Chelsea coach who was a convicted nonce. Nice bit of trivia about him. Anyway, so Ricks comes in and he lasts about 6 months. He admits to the players at one point, look, I'm not even picking the team. I'm just doing what the owner's telling me. So it's like...
Is that why he was brought in, just to be like a sort of...
Yes, man.
Yes, man, yeah.
Yes, I think he's not aware of it at first, but it sort of gets worse and worse. Romanov starts acting more and more weird.
I guess when you're a convicted nonce, you can't really have your pick of the plum jobs.
Your options are limited. Yeah. Who knew? Anyway, so things slightly go off the boil, but Hearts actually still finished that season runners-up. They split the Old Firm. I don't think anyone's done that since, except obviously when Rangers...
Yeah,
you know,
went in administration,
yeah.
Or died, depending on if you're Rangers or Celtic.
Yeah. Is it the same club?
Or when they went to
is it the same club? We won't get into that. But Hearts, so they finish runners up. They win the Scottish Cup, and they qualify for the Champions League. So you'd have to say, despite his meddling, Romanov's delivered almost on his promises there. But then things start to go really wrong. So he starts shipping in all these random players from Lithuania. He tells club staff that he wants to change the club's name to Dynamo Hearts, to give them more appeal to Eastern European fans. He tries to change the kit to the Lithuanian flag. And then he wants to make it tartan at one point. Apparently they come in and there's like, he's done a mock-up of the kit on the wall, but he obviously couldn't do the tartan colouring. So he just bought a shortbread packet and stuck it over the shirt. It's just tartan. It's gone to one of those tourist shops in Edinburgh. And then he brings in his personal clairvoyant, a Russian woman called Rima. So one player remembers, Rima was this Russian woman who didn't speak any English. You would stand there and she had this golden stick and would touch all your joints and bark orders to another Russian woman on the computer. They would come back and tell you how long you could play in a game. If she said you could play for 62 minutes, you would come off after 62 minutes. So apparently this clairvoyant is picking the team. She feeds back to Romanov, who tells the manager, follow her orders. Another player says, they installed this device and you stuck a finger in it and it showed you a percentage of how ready you were to play. Romanov consulted with the clairvoyant and passed her words on to the manager and that's how it was picked. She was earning $3,000 a week and driving a BMW.
Wow.
I think she saw them coming.
Yeah. I think she eventually got sacked, but she probably saw that coming.
It's great. It's a bit like Raymond Dominic picking players based on their star signs, right?
Yeah. What's the star sign?
I think it was Scorpios. He said he had a deep distrust of Scorpios, and that I think who was it? It was like Robert Pires and
Mikel Silvestre
like missed out on countless caps just because they were Scorpios.
Star sign. Yeah, not as creative as using the golden rods, and I'm quite interested in what this device that you put your finger in is.
I know, right? You've got to fake that in some way, right? So is it like those blood pressure monitors you get?
Yeah, and then a graph's ticking, loads of paper coming out of the machine. Yeah, so it's impressive theatre, I'll give them that.
Yeah.
Good old Rima. Anyway, she sticks around for a while, she's picking the team. Apparently at this point, like, any player who can leave is leaving because the writing's on the wall. A lot of the, like, senior staff resign. Results are starting to go badly. And then Romanov starts accusing other teams of match-fixing and he claims that the Scottish FA are in on it. And he starts ordering the media team at the club to release really weird statements. So he forces them to release an official statement on the website that has the line, I beg you, Mowgli, take the monkeys back to the safari park. Mowgli's the kid in the Jungle Book, isn't he? Yeah. Apparently that's a dig at the Scottish Premier League, the Blazers.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it.
Subtle.
Yeah. And then, I mean, who could have predicted this? The players start getting paid late, which is pretty much always the sign that it's over. Apparently there's one moment where the players are like, they haven't been paid for a couple of months and the TV's on in the training ground and the news comes up and Vladimir Romanov is trying to swim across Loch Ness. They're like, right. And the club goes into administration. And they
was that advised by the clairvoyant?
Yeah, if you just swim Loch Ness. I can imagine he had a bit of a fascination with the log for monster reasons.
I mean, it sounds like he sort of descended into some kind of
madness.
But it start off quite like legit, and then just kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he was from 10 games in, he was trying to pick the team from the beginning, but I think he did go into increasing madness. I think as things went wrong, it spiraled. Mm-hmm. And as more and more, he grew more and more distrustful of the Scottish people working for the club and turned more and more to his Lithuanians.
Yeah, because he brought loads of like Eastern European players in, and I think I always thought it was like sort of just trying to get them in the shop window to bigger clubs, you know, that kind of.
Yeah.
So there seemed to be like a sort of rationale behind him. Obviously, I don't know the stuff behind the scenes of
pure madness. Apparently, at one point, he brings in a guy. I think he's called Vlad, and Vlad will never tell anyone his surname or like really answer any questions. And he would just watch them in the office, almost like an informant. Because I think trust.
Did he work for the KGB?
Yeah, it's got quite KGB flavour. Anyway, so that inevitably ends in tears. The club goes into administration, and they're relegated in 2014. And that's the moment that Vladimir fucks off. They they get bought by a consortium and they become fan-owned, and they're now Britain's biggest fan-owned club, which is really nice. And they do, to be fair to Vladimir, so they won the Scottish Cup in his first season. They win it again in 2012. So there are some high points, but it's largely a disaster. As for Vladimir, 2 years after having to flee Edinburgh, his business in Lithuania collapses. He owns this big bank that's like slightly dubious origins, and he's then accused of money laundering and he flees to Russia. Lithuania try and get them to extradite him, but he's safe in Russia. He wins the court case. But he's now penniless. And apparently you can't get hold of him. But last anyone heard, he was bankrupt and living in a disused nuclear submarine in Siberia. Couldn't be more fitting.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard that he served on that nuclear submarine because he used to be in the army. And he then obviously got rich and decided to buy this submarine, do it up. And then I think he wanted to like drive it around places. But then something, I can't remember. It was when he went bankrupt, so he couldn't get it back on the water. So he just was stuck with this submarine. So, may as well live on it, I guess. And
on the Arctic tundra.
It's because Frank McAvaney's 100 grand tied up in court. You can't go anywhere.
Can't launch the ship.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of deep sea treasure in this episode.
A lot of nautical chat here.
Yeah, so I don't know. Apparently Lithuania still want him in jail in Lithuania, but the Russians are not playing ball.
So next up, we've got possibly the best talk sport caller of all times. So you probably heard this clip. It's very, very famous. So this caller calls in to ask the talk sport panel why Craig Brown is refusing to pick Hearts keeper Antti Niemi for Scotland.
I'm phoning, you know, about Craig Brown's selection for the Scotland squad.
Yep.
He must know that Hearts have got a good team. We get Colin Cameron in the squad, Stephen Presley.
Yep.
I just don't know why for at least 3 seasons he's been ignoring Antti Niemi.
Antti Niemi?
Aye. I don't know why he doesn't get a game.
For Scotland?
Aye.
He's from Finland.
He's what?
He's Finnish, isn't he?
He's not finished. He's only 28.
No, not finished. He's from Finland.
What do you mean?
That's where his nationality is Finnish. He's from Finland.
He's not Scottish?
No.
Oh, I thought he was Scottish.
That always makes me laugh. Like, and I think it came out later that it was a hoax. It's an entirely plausible hoax. But like, how you could do that call without cracking up yourself, I think is an incredible...
You tease it up really well,
It was so disappointing to find out that he was in on the joke. He was just winding them up.
But the panel like, had no clue,
It's a bit like when you find out Santa's not real. You find out that call was a joke.
But the panel are in on it. No. So it's a prank call.
Yeah. But like to keep it, like, because I can't even watch it without laughing. So like to actually do it like without crying.
It's not finished. It's 28.
Just to sort of get him to say like in that way, right? So not he's from Finland.
He says it first, doesn't he?
Yeah, and to keep what?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's really good.
While we're on the subject of Craig Brown, who's the Scotland manager who's mentioned then, he's got a few skeletons in his closet as well. So I think when he was appointed Scotland manager, he wasn't really seen as much of a sex symbol. He's this sort of balding 60-year-old ex-Falkirk defender. But in 1999, so a year after he'd led Scotland at France 98, Craig began affairs with two different women at the same time. So there was one school teacher from Fife and a nurse from Ayrshire. But by the time Euro 2000 came around, he ditched both of them and his wife and shacked up with a 23-year-old sports reporter who then travelled with him around the Netherlands during the tournament.
What, just like
shagging? Yeah.
I'm picturing caravan. I like how they had quite Duncan Ferguson-style professions, his mistresses as well. School teacher and a nurse.
Yeah.
Wasn't there some tabloid front page being like, how does he do it? And it's like, they call him Jammy Craig 61. Because he's not an obvious womanizer.
No.
I like the way you describe them as bald 60-year-old. It just gives me hope for the future. I'm like, okay.
You could have three mistresses.
My time is yet to come, guys. I'm yeah.
As always with these multiple mistress stories, how can you be arsed? How's that fun?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As we've discussed, the Old Firm rivalry can send fans a bit loopy. And George Boateng, the Middlesbrough and Aston Villa legend, found that out the hard way towards the end of his career. So I think he was maybe leaving one of those two clubs by this point. And George headed up to Glasgow for contract talks with Celtic, quite late stage. It looked like the move was on. So he headed up there with his wife and kids. And they checked into the Charing Cross Hilton Hotel, dropped their bags in the room. And then they thought, well, we'll just pop into the hotel bar for a quick drink before we head to Celtic Park. And for some reason, George was just standing at the bar with his wife and kids when all the drinkers in the bar started yelling abuse at him. I don't know if they were Rangers fans and they knew that's why he was up there. Anyway, so he starts getting abused and he's like telling them to fuck off. And pretty soon the whole bar is pelting him with ice cubes. They're just like pulling them out of their drinks, chucking them at him. And the staff have to step in and stop everyone and just get them to leave poor George alone. Anyway, so George is like, that's pretty weird for whatever. Let's go for these contract talks. And he heads over to Celtic Park. They have a productive chat. Things are looking good. I think they, you know, say, like, let's pick this up again soon. And George heads off with his family, get back in his car and drive home. And they're halfway down the M74 when he notices that the wheels on his BMW are shuddering and other drivers are flashing him and beeping him and trying to get his attention. He's like, what's going on? So George pulls over, calls the AA, and the AA arrive and they're like, your wheel nuts are loose. And it turns out that fans hanging around outside Celtic Park while he was in his contract meeting had loosened the wheel nuts on his car while he was in there.
Oh my God.
As like a bit of a prank.
That's top banter, man. Just, you know. your whole family could hurtle off the side of the motorway at 70 miles an hour, but got you. Brilliant.
Is that like Rangers fans was my question.
Again, you're asking me like I know the answer. Like
I'm opening it to the floor, but yeah.
I don't know. It's quite extreme. It should be done more, I think, in football, things like that. Where
attempted murder.
You can't prove anything. No, just like if you don't want a player to sign for a rival club, you should threaten their life.
Yeah, pelt them with ice. And if that doesn't work, because even the ice pelting, I'm like, how did you know that he was there to meet Celtic? Because you wouldn't just if a random player from Middlesbrough came up.
Well, I mean, Glasgow is that goldfish bowl where, like, the rumor mill about everything. You kind of hear about these things, so people would have known that he was there. He was, almost like those Twitter things of, like, you know, on transfer deadline day, where it's like, I saw so and so at such and such airport. And
yeah.
I used to really enjoy sending in fake rumors to BBC Sport on transfer deadline day, trying to get them read out.
Did you?
I never succeeded. I kept on trying to tell them that David Trezeguet had been spotted at Fulham's training ground. Tried that a few times. So I thought it was plausible. It was like end of his career.
Yeah, you got to aim a bit lower than that. World Cup winner.
Just trying to will it into existence. Is that what's happening?
Actually, yeah, speaking of transfer hoaxes, probably the greatest in history came when Sky Sports revealed that Aberdeen were close to signing Yerdas Selzavon, a Turkish striker. But in fact, this turned out to be a hoax. So your dad sells Avon is a popular insult in Scotland.
It is.
Because Avon's like a door-to-door sales makeup brand, isn't it?
Yeah. I always thought it was a good job to meet single women, but it's frowned upon in Scotland. Yeah.
It's more that in Edward Scissorhands, it's what the mum does.
Yeah. Like, you had like reps and you would get a commission and stuff like that.
There's an argument it's pyramid selling, but anyway. Anyway, so your dad sells Avon is a popular insult in Scotland, and a group of Aberdeen fans made a fake Aberdeen Twitter account announcing this fake signing, and then Sky Sports just put it on the ticker, like, your dad sells Avon, a tricky Turkish winger for undisclosed fee. So good.
How deep do they go? Do they like have Wikipedia pages for them and
yeah,
stuff?
I don't know.
Like, surely the most cursory level of fact checking would have
revealed that was not a real player. Although, how early this might have been, sort of early internet when there wasn't Transfermarkt to just look up any player.
Maybe
I don't think it was that long ago. I think it was like 2016 or something.
Oh, nice. Someone got one of the players from Dream Team. You remember the football themed soap on Sky One? They got them to announce the signing of, was it Didier Baptiste? Well, who I think had already been killed off in the show.
I love the idea that it's just like a sort of bunch of like bedroom, you know, incels like sending out all these rumours all the time to see who can
they're really good.
Must be quite fun fishing through them when you're doing the like BBC Sport live text feed. Just these bollocks rumours coming.
Actually, speaking of George Boateng's horrible experience at Celtic, he's not the only player who fucked off after a very brief taste of Scottish football. So Riyad Mahrez did an interview a few years ago where he said that when he was still playing in the French lower leagues, he had a trial at St Mirren, and it was 2.5 months long. And apparently he scored like 7 goals in his first 2 games and was just expecting them to give him a contract. But they were really dragging their feet, and he hated the weather. So he said it was so cold, it was abuse. And apparently he was just every day like, when are you just going to give me a contract? And one day it was like snowing in training. He just decided he'd had enough. And so he just borrowed a bike from a guy at the training ground, cycled straight to the airport and flew home to France.
If he didn't like the weather for training, why didn't he even want a contractor? Why was he like, he'd be committed to stay, I guess.
Well, I guess at least then it would be worth it, maybe.
I mean, this is an error. I don't imagine it would have
been. It's a launch pad, Dwayne.
Okay, so back in the good old days, every self-respecting football club had a charming tea lady. And at St. Johnstone's, that was the lovely Aggie Moffat. And Aggie, you know, she'd been at the club forever. She was absolutely beloved by all of the players, especially for her legendary Cullen Skink soup that you know, would warm the cockles on a cold winter's day when you've been out in the training in the driving rain. But Aggie also had a bit of a reputation as a fiery character. She didn't suffer fools gladly, as Graeme Souness, the Rangers manager, discovered in 1991. So Rangers are playing away at St Johnstone, and Graeme Souness is in the dressing room giving his team talk. He's a fiery character himself, and during his team talk, he accidentally knocks over the tea jug and it smashes on the dressing room floor. And Aggie hears and she goes in there and drags Graham out, and they have this massive row in the corridor. And it kind of, everyone's like, fucking hell, what's going on? He's like crossed Aggie. And the press hear about it, and she later gives an interview and she just says, oh, he's just a plonker. He always will be. I never liked the man and I never will. Terrible Scottish accent.
I've got that a pass.
Yeah, yes.
For an old woman tea lady.
In St. Johnston.
Yeah.
There's a longer quote coming up, and I think I'm going to struggle on that one.
No pressure.
Anyway, so later that season, Rangers are playing St. Johnstone away again. I think they're drawn in the cup. And you can see like Graham's before the game, like, fuck yeah, I've got to go back there. I'm just going to see Aggie again. He's already pretty nervous. And this time, an explosive row breaks out between the two of them because Rangers have left muddy boots in the dressing room. And so they get into this big row, and then Graham says she stormed up the stairs to see the chairman and I followed up behind her. It was on that trip that I decided that I needed to get out of there. He's talking about getting out of Scotland. So he literally credits this argument with Aggie Moffat with his decision to leave Rangers and join Liverpool, which turns out is a good thing that he does, because Aggie later gives an interview where she says, if he'd come back next season, he would have finished it. His nose would have been splattered across his face. That's the only thing I regret not happening. I didn't finish it. Should have broken his big nose.
Very good.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you. It's like Aggie Moffat was in the room. The great Aggie.
From beyond the grave.
Yeah. Graham Souness just looked over his shoulder.
That's right. So she's an absolute...
She's a...
Battle axe.
A battle axe. That's the word for it. Yeah.
I love the idea, again, of just like these people at clubs just agitating people. Like... Graham Souness was a hard guy.
Hard, yeah.
Tough guy.
Yeah. Not as tough as Aggie, though.
Well, and playing St. Johnston twice a season was enough to drive him out of the country. Just the thought of seeing her.
Driven over the border.
Because he actually said, she's the reason I left.
Yeah. He says he says, it was on that trip I decided I had to get out of here.
All right, I've got a few what I would call sort of quick hit stories that, you know, they're not that long, but they really sort of capture some of the magic of Scottish football. So I'm just going to fire them out. Okay, so this first one, this is the headline from 2007. Rangers right back Kirk Broadfoot injured by exploding egg. So the story here is that Kirk was inspecting two eggs he just poached in the microwave when one of them blew up and squirted scalding hot water on his face, and he was out for a few weeks with burns. He had to go to hospital.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. A few weeks for that.
Yeah, for a poached egg. Two poached eggs. Okay, another classic headline. Hibernian star Jason Cummings banned from McDonald's after throwing McMuffins at staff. He's obviously a bit of a cult hero. They call him Cumdog.
Cumdog, yeah.
And he now plays in Australia and for Australia.
Yeah, he was at the World Cup last time out, wasn't he?
And Australia, did they get to the second round or quarters?
He's last 16, I think.
He's got further in a World Cup. He's the furthest any Scotsman's ever got in the World Cup. Yeah. It's Cumdog with Australia.
But coming back, he should get a statue, I think. Cumdog should get a statue. It's the road,
yeah. Didn't he got the nickname Cumdog from him. He would do these wrestling matches where he'd strip down to his underwear and write Cumdog on his chest.
Really?
And there's this video of him wrestling. This is, I think, at Hibernian. This video of him wrestling his teammates.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a standard Australian.
It sounds, Aussie's quite camo.
Cumdog.
Fucking camo. All right, another story here. 2015. Celtic's supported liaison officer wrote to fans encouraging them to wash. So apparently the excessive BO from certain fans was, quote, impacting on the experience of the match for some fans. That's class. That could happen at any ground, but most clubs probably wouldn't write to the fans.
Yeah, was the editor of this newspaper a Rangers fan by any chance?
No, there was an actual letter that Celtic's, they got like, you know, the supported liaison officer. And I think someone wrote to him to complain and said, like, it ruined our experience. Which, I mean, like, I've seen worse at football grounds, but I guess if you're next to them.
Yeah. I mean, it must be quite extreme, though, to
write in.
Yeah.
I was on a train yesterday next to a guy who I'm pretty sure shat himself. I can say it did impact my experience of the train journey.
How did you know?
It was just that bad.
How do you know? How do you think?
Right, yeah. And what did you say to him?
I didn't say anything.
You write to TFL.
I complained and they put out a statement asking people to please do not shit yourself before you get on our train, because it does impact other passengers' experience.
All right. Another story from 2017. Aberdeen bag a late winner against Ross County in 2017. Their side are cock-a-hoop. They're very excited. And Gary Mackay-Stephen, who was actually on the bench for the game, but he was particularly excited. He headed out in Glasgow that night to celebrate and ended up jumping in the River Kelvin at 3 a.m. and had to be fished out by fire crews. He was then diagnosed with hypothermia by ambulance men. He later said, "It was some experience." I like that one. Those are my quick hits.
Okay, so I'm going to take it back to October 2018 when Partick Thistle are second bottom of the Scottish Championship and they appoint ex-Wigan defender Gary Caldwell as manager. And to begin with, it doesn't go too well. So his reign begins with 4 defeats and a draw, at which point he decides he needs to do something different. It needs to be a bit of shock therapy here. And, you know, some managers at this point might book a warm weather training camp in Dubai where they can, you know, build team spirit over a couple of virgin mojitos. But Gary instead decides that they'll spend a surprise day with the British Army Parachute Regiment. So before this, like, the players are quite excited about it. They think they're just going to, you know, get to fire some guns and stuff. And that's how the day starts. So they drive them up into the Highlands, and these soldiers let them have a go shooting the guns, show them some artillery, get to try on the night vision goggles, and it's all quite fun. And the players are thinking, like, oh, this is just a bit of a jolly. And they're preparing to head back home when vans arrive, and the players are split up into groups and taken to different destinations, like miles apart. And they begin this hellish assault course through the Highlands. So they're forced to run like 4 or 5 miles between each station. And then when they get there, they have to do these like grueling physical tasks in the like bitterly cold. So they're like carrying these huge logs up hills through freezing water, lugging like 20 liter cans of water, carrying stretchers with casualties. It's like absolutely exhausting. And they do this the entire day. And then finally they get to the end and the soldier's like, all right, that's it. Like, you guys have done really well. Day's finished. And one of the players, he said later, like, I could hardly pick my head up. I was so tired. They're completely like dragging their battered bodies back to the base camp and looking forward to just getting back home and getting into bed, when another van arrives, and this time it's the SAS. So these guys with masks on jump out of the vans, like screaming at the players, grab them, drag them into the van. So this is a quote from one of the players. "They told us to take our stuff off and jump in the van. 5 minutes later, bang, 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 doors open. Guys with masks ragdolled us out, headlocked us, flipped us on the floor. We were blindfolded with earmuffs on. They were dragging us about rooms, bouncing off the walls in total darkness." So at this point, like, the players are breaking down. There's like guys are crying. Brice and Tambway, who's this Belgian youth player who'd only joined the club a few weeks ago, panics and tries to escape. So he's like legs it off and takes 4 SAS men to bring him down, like drag him back.
Does he think he's like genuinely going to be killed?
Yeah. I'm not sure he realizes that it's like a drink. She thinks this like morale building session has gone horribly wrong.
Are people actually crying?
People are in tears, like,
because they're so tired anyway.
They're so tired. They're just like literally broken, and then they're just getting like headlocked by these SAS guys and like beaten around in the pitch black.
Was it just the players? Like, where's Gary Caldwell?
Gary Caldwell was just like back in the camp, yeah. Just like got his feet up watching Love Island.
I love the idea of like that Bear Grylls show where he puts them on an island and they have to like survive with nothing. And he just rocks up in a boat, like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. I'm with Gary Caldwell.
Yeah. So anyway, it's like an absolutely hellish experience for the players, and they're relegated shortly after.
Didn't build the old team spirit then.
No.
I probably did, but just hating the manager that United against.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one way to motivate your players. But
all right. Well, that's a nice dramatic one to finish with. Really enjoyed that. There are actually loads of stories that we obviously had to leave out for time. So maybe we should do this again sometime. But Dwayne, we will definitely have you back for Frank McAvenny.
It's been lots of fun, yeah.
Next time you're down south. Or maybe we come to Glasgow for a special
wow.
in situ recording.
Don't drive, for your wheel nuts will be a
loosened.
It's not a threat. I mean, I'm listening to
what by you?
just for legal reasons, I have to say that's not a threat. It's just a possibility.
Yeah, that'll throw the live show off a bit. But Dwayne, thanks a lot. We've loved having you.
Thanks, guys.
Have you again, and thanks Zach.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.